interrupting the current neo-colonial, climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricket 2 Busting Episode BTWRLM 637. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport. And relative to last episode regarding the potential clandestine nature of Alligator Alcatraz and the Lolita Express Jetport, the Epstein Enterprises run or inspired side hustle, U.S. sets record for child deportation orders. President Trump has cracked down on illegal immigration since returning to office. More than 8,300 undocumented immigrant children, aged 11 or under, were issued deportation orders in the U.S. in April, the highest monthly figure on record. Many face immigration judges alone, without lawyers or guardians. Since Trump's inauguration in January, immigration judges have reportedly ordered the removal of more than 53,000 minors, most of them in elementary school or younger. Deportations of teenagers have also risen, but remain below the peak since during Trump's first term in 2020. Some of the children are reportedly unaccompanied minors without a guardian in the U.S., with the immigration authorities no longer tracking the exact number of such cases. No longer tracking, except the unaccompanied children are tracked enough to be brought in for deportation, correct? But tracked, not tracked, for what purpose then if Epstein didn't kill himself? Lawyers told the Independent that children often do not understand the legal process. No, the children really don't understand anything, really, do they? Why they don't have capacity to do legal things? In one case, a 6-year-old was reportedly separated from his father, detained for 4 months, and deported without legal aid after federal funding was cut. But all these are deported where and to whom? For what? Maybe the non-clients of Epstein have an idea. Except, Trump says Biden administration would have released Epstein files if they contained a smoking gun. But we the people are not interested in what Biden would have done. That's why he's gone. United States President Donald Trump said on Friday that if Epstein files had contained solid incriminating evidence, the Biden administration would have made this information public. But if there was a smoking gun on Epstein, why didn't the Dems, who controlled the files for 4 years and had Garland and Comey in charge, use it? Because they had nothing, Trump wrote on Truth Social. Is that true? If it pointed to the greatest ally of the United States or at the systemic corruption the Unit Party uses to keep this dog and pony show performing to entertain the masses? Is that really true? Late Thursday, Trump asked U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi to release trial transcripts in the case against convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein if the court approves such a decision. And so congratulations to all you that weren't putting up with it and made quite a stink. I don't think the trial transcripts are going to be what we are after, but you got them to flinch a little bit. Earlier in July, the FBI and the United States Department of Justice said in a memo that Epstein had not blackmailed influential people and had no client list. Okay, no client list. But that's illegalism. It's an evasion. There is no list Jeffrey Epstein made of the clients. I get that. Why would there be? But that's tricky and coy, isn't it? So how about where is the list of clients that the FBI and the DOJ compiled from the complaints of the victims? Isn't the victims the smoking gun, if not the dead body? And that's a lingering stench on this, focusing on Epstein, as Trump is. By objecting to people being focused on the Epstein files is the cat box cover-up of the turd that won't flush, right, cat turd too? Of the underlying and continuing interest in the cause for the justice for the victims. The victim of a crime is usually what drives an investigation, because without a victim, there is no case. No body, no case. This Trumpenstein's serious problem that appears to be aiding and abetting much more serious crimes, as well as the stealthy overthrow of the proper function of the United States government. and an immense insult to the victims, even to we the people. Are we even thinking about this as the people? Trump unilaterally declares an Epstein hoax, or due to now Democrat evidence tampering, instead of declaring the foreign or domestic threat to the United States and its national security, initiating the actions to stop it, as he's done recently over and over against everybody else. Where is the evidence of that intense investigation beyond Epstein? Because until that is proved up, Trump is complicit with the apparent treason that is evidenced in the absence of a better proof in the court of we the people. We the people, ultimately charged with the obligation to stop all threats of foreign and domestic in the constitutional mandate to alter and abolish, reaffirmed in the First and Second Amendments, when the government itself fails, or the Manhattan Mauler, the Mar-a-Lago Mauler, if you please, throws in the towel, when there are a few more moves he could throw instead to make America great again. The conclusions provoked a backlash among some Republicans over the administration's handling of the case. That's right, the administrative handling. So follow that as well. Where's the evidence of the Homeland Security Agency's investigation done for the threat to the United States that the groomed child abuse victims compromising their sensitively and influence-placed victimizer criminals because of their apparent foreign government handlers or clandestine foreign operatives or money? And whether or not Epstein didn't kill himself to semi-consciousness? Where is the investigation worthy of the crimes against the victims in the country, at least presenting evidence of the victims that came forward, if there is some sort of hang-up about that? Without these investigations, or by ham sandwich indictment coercion, because it can and does when it suits the government to do that, there is no trust that the government upheld its duty, and because it is compromised by a foreign interest, all the way to the highest office in the land. Right, Trump? Epstein is irrelevant to that continuing vulnerability. Even presenting the files, both credible and now we find out non-credible, doesn't get rid of that national security level problem. Clearly, the victims weren't made up or a hoax. Clearly, Epstein Island and Zorro Ranch and a number of others similarly used are not made up or a hoax. Epstein was a professor without creds. Where's the forensic audit on Epstein's wealth, where that actually came from, to call him a financier? Who causes an innocent billionaire to not kill himself? Why weren't the victims, such as the suicided Virginia did not kill herself Guafre, put in the witness protection program that Epstein surely was put where Epstein didn't kill himself? How did the national security relevant FBI investigation find there are no clients to list, whether or not a foreign illicit conspiracy and execution? And before that, the national security background checks for every relevant official that can where they can find a hair out of place. They turned up absolutely nothing? Really? In 2019, Epstein was charged in the U.S. with trafficking minors for the purpose of their sexual exploitation, which carries a prison sentence of up to 40 years, and conspiracy to engage in such trafficking, up to 5 years in prison. But trafficking to no one? Really, Pam Bondi? Really? According to prosecutors, between 2002 and 2005, Epstein engaged in sexual relations with dozens of underage girls whom he hosted at his residence in New York and Florida. In New York, like the place the former Israel Prime Minister and IDF General Ehud Barak was a frequent guest. Epstein paid them hundreds of dollars in cash, after which he assigned some of the victims to serve as recruiters to bring in more girls, some of whom were as young as 14 years old. In early July 2019, a Manhattan court in New York City, after hearing Epstein's arraignment, ruled that he be kept in custody and not released on bail. In late July of that year, it was reported that Epstein had been found in a jail cell, semi-conscious, and had later died. the investigation revealed that he had committed suicide. Semi-conscious. So Epstein didn't kill himself. And the list of the clientless victims, I guess, right, Mar-a-Lago Mueller? Even if the justice system that can indict a ham sandwich and get a conviction without a national security imperative, like it does routinely to the peon class, that likely some of the victims are a part of, how come the trafficking ticket we get at a trafficking stop gets a better cut of smoked gun ham? No, President Trump, those concerned by this are not stupid people. He didn't even spell it S-T-O-O-P-I-D. Maybe you should reassess whom you serve and the America you intend to make great. And hot on the heels of the Epstein catbox cover-up, more litter. Tulsi Gabbard releases overwhelming evidence of Obama coup plot against Trump. Declassified documents show top Obama-era officials overruled intelligence findings to manufacture the Russiagate narrative, Gabbard says. Gabbard unveiled more than 100 pages of emails, memos, and internal communications, which she described as, quote, overwhelming evidence, close quote, of a coordinated effort by senior Obama-era officials to politicize intelligence and launch the multi-year Russia collusion investigation. She dubbed it a treasonous conspiracy to subvert the will of the American people. Quote, this was not intelligence gathering, Gabbard stated. It was narrative building. Okay, Ms. Gabbard, now do Epstein. No, not just the Epstein files, the entire Epstein-related matter and the apparent ongoing coup plot and successful execution against we the people, because whatever was investigated wasn't intelligence gathering, but it was narrative building from what I can tell. And you can start with his victims and those he trafficked to no one's victims. Because as you say in the matter applicable to the Epstein-related matter, no matter how powerful, every person involved must be brought to justice, she stressed. Quote, our nation's integrity depends on accountability, close quote. And please take this one, write this one down. Our nation's integrity depends on accountability. And please do not limit it to the Epstein case or even this one. How about everywhere? Have you seen any accountability? Really? Quote, the integrity of our democratic republic depends on full accountability, Gabbard concluded. Nothing less will restore the public's trust and ensure nothing like this ever happens again. Yes, accountability. Let's ensure none of this corruption and usurpation ever happens again. Right, President Donald, stupid people, Trump? And there still be alligators and other swamp creatures. Sticking with Tulsi Gabbard, she explains why the fight against the deep state is slow. Pile the litter high now. Government's insiders are resisting efforts to rein in their power, the U.S. Director of National Intelligence has said. U.S. Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard has voiced frustration over what she described as a slow-moving effort to dismantle entrenched, quote, deep state, close quote, elements within the federal government. Long-standing bureaucratic interests are actively obstructing President Donald Trump's agenda, according to her. Gabbard's remarks came after Trump's administration's controversial decision to not release the Epstein list. I want to interject that there isn't an Epstein-made list. What we should be hearing is the FBI, maybe even Homeland Security, curated list from all the victims, is what we should be seeing. Officials have denied the existence of any document naming alleged high-profile associates of the late financier and convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The decision has drawn criticism from some commentators who see it as an evidence of the deep state's enduring influence. Quote, they exist within every single agency of the federal government and the national security state and the propaganda media, Gabbard said at a student conference on Sunday hosted by the conservative nonprofit Turning Point USA in Tampa, Florida. Florida gets a lot of play in all this, doesn't it? pointing that out to you last week. I've been pointing out before that. So here we are. Quote, I feel it's the same frustration that I see many of you expressing, she added. Why aren't things going faster? Why aren't we getting results more quickly? The deep state is fighting us every step of the way. But Tulsi, dear, you are the deep state, as is Trump. Trump defended Attorney General Pam Bondi's handling of the matter, saying the idea of the Epstein files has been exaggerated or fabricated by his political adversaries. Gabbard's comments followed a speech by former Trump campaign strategist Steve Bannon, who called on the audience at Tampa to wait for the eventual full release of documents related to the Epstein case. Full release. Sounds like a comedy routine here. Admitting to something. Bannon argued that the special prosecutor would be appointed to probe efforts to undermine Trump and his MAGA movement and could bring the materials to light. Quote, Epstein is a key that picks the lock on so many things, not just individuals, but also institutions, Bannon said. Intelligence institutions, foreign governments, and who was working with him on our intelligence apparatus and in our government. So we'll have to wait for the infiltrated and compromised intelligence apparatus to investigate itself. Is that about right, Tulsi? The deep state is fighting us every step of the way, indeed. Schizophrenic much? So instead of Trump doing the heroic work of draining the swamp, Trump threatens to take away O'Donnell's citizenship. Presidents don't have the power to revoke citizenship of somebody born in the U.S. is the takeaway right off the bat here before we get all too lost in this thing. But again, the cat litter's getting deep around this Epstein thing. And it's really not about Epstein. It's about the way this government's functioning, actually dysfunctioning. Rosie O'Donnell moved to Ireland days before President Trump began his second term. And Trump, who has been feuding with her for almost 20 years, doesn't want her to come back to America. I have to give her this much credit. She at least left when she said she would. Quote, because of the fact that Rosie O'Donnell is not in the best interests of our country, I am giving serious consideration to taking away her citizenship, Trump wrote. She is a threat to humanity. And that is the entire story right there. Presidents don't have the power to revoke citizenship of somebody born in the United States, but Trump does not care about the law. He acts in flagrant disregard of the law. Or he purportedly uses it to take advantage or impose undue hardship to give him an advantage. And the kicker is, he doesn't have to. Now he chooses to be a loose sphincter. Now, I don't like Rosie O'Donnell in the least. She just rubs me the wrong way and has for a very long time. And I find her repulsive. But I'm beginning to dislike this Trumpster fire more. For way more disastrous reasons than O'Donnell causes in her private capacity. Trump is proving he's nothing more than a golden-plated two-bit wise guy surrounded by gold to hide the apparent fact that he is last class. But why is this really important, my listener might ask. Remember the homegrown, the temper Trump Don mentioned previously, saying he'd remove the homegrown? He'd called them criminals, very bad people, and he removed them from the country? With his unwarrantable threat to Rosie O'Donnell, one of the homegrown criminals, now, just because, who do you think he intended to remove with his statement about the homegrown? Illegal aliens? Do people think this is a joke? A side to take and cheerlead about? Did you really vote for this? If you think you did, are you thinking? Trump invokes a very serious accusation, which is not spoken about in the article, but he mentions it in a phrase. And I mentioned it. I hope you picked up on it. He says Rosie O'Donnell is not in the best interest of the United States. That interest is related to war powers, not citizenship. Remember the murder memo? Remember the indefinite detention? Remember the Obama extrajudicial drone-to-death targeted killing attack of Anwar al-Awlaki a U.S.-born citizen from Denver, Colorado. He was drone to death in 2011. And a few weeks later, his 16-year-old son, Abdul Rahman, was drone to death, as well as Samir Khan and Judah Muhammad, all without benefit of due process, all without due process of law. Sound familiar? What threat to we the people have I been speaking about all these years? The phrase revoking your citizenship is an interesting euphemism in this context, and that Trump likely finds great and beautiful and terrific. He is saying this in an official capacity, remember. That's not cool in the least. The precedent is already made. Does everyone agreeing with this think they'll always be on the right side of the government tyrant, whomever it is? What say you, Elon Musk? Are you the homegrown? When will you know? But even if you do agree, you aren't the sole arbiter of what constitutes lawful constitutional powers. And beyond that, how is it Trump can think Rosie O'Donnell is a threat to humanity, but Satan Yehu is not? Israel is not. Genociding the people of Palestine for political purpose is not a threat to humanity? What exceptional type of vindictive lunatic is Trump becoming? And not to excuse or diminish the problem, but is it jab harm? More likely, though, as all the rest, is why promising to make America great again was only to placate people in supporting but not bringing accountability to government, or more particularly, those in it. And the difference and distinction Tulsi's making is because they're moving for the future offices. If you notice, she's being pushed up and asked, would you vote for this team, J.D. Vance and Tulsi Gabbard? And I can almost see the statements. Now, Trump couldn't do it. We're going to come and we're going to carry the ball over the finish line for you all. Now, you think to help his cause, Trump would direct quite a few at the swamp to clear it out quickly. Revealed, Trump has launched as many airstrikes in 5 months as Biden did in 4 years. Despite pledging not to engage in conflict overseas, the United States president has sharply escalated attacks. Donald Trump has overseen nearly as many airstrikes in the first 5 months of his second term as Joe Biden launched in his entire presidency. United States president onslaughts on Houthi militants in Yemen and jihadists in Somalia have been more ferocious than Mr. Biden's and has been ordered strikes. He's also ordered strikes in Iraq, Syria, and most recently Iran. After campaigning on a pledge to end American involvement in military conflicts, he has sharply escalated the country's air campaigns, according to data from ACLED, Armed Conflict Location and Event Data, which maps conflicts. Mr. Trump has overseen 529 airstrikes since his inauguration, compared to 555 over the entire 4 years of the previous administration. Mr. Trump insists that his intense approach ensures peace through strength, an expression often attributed to Ronald Reagan. Well, we will measure our success not only by the battles we win, but also by the wars we end, and perhaps most importantly, the wars we never get into. Can we point to any one of those yet? It's called peace through strength, Mr. Trump said in a speech during his inaugural ball. Okay, Mr. Peacemaker, how's that been working for you? Have you considered trying to pee the peace through strength of a character through integrity and honesty, and not the strength of the three-ring circus, strong arm, and clown show that the administration has become? Also, Trump, you'll see that as a heading last episode. Also, Trump's Unabomber story has some problems. President says Kaczynski was his uncle's student at MIT, and they spoke about him an impossibility. While speaking in Pennsylvania this week, President Trump told a story about his late uncle, John Trump, an esteemed science professor at MIT. The president got a few minor facts wrong about the length of his uncle's tenure and his degrees, but what has people really scratching their heads is that the Trump claimed the Unabomber Ted Kaczynski was one of his uncle's students. What other just little details is Trump getting wrong? Again, I bring up this jab harm. That's not a joke. I don't want to diminish a thing that's really going on. What's the real causes? What is going on here? What are we watching right in front of our eyes? Maybe of great and quick diminishment. There's some other new stories coming up. He may be not as healthy as we think or that he promoted. Neither here nor there. Nothing is coming out the way he was voted in for, despite the promotions. I'm talking about the deep stuff, not the deep state, the things he was going to do. It's not coming to fruition. Why? There's a very little difference between a madman and a genius, said Trump. But Kaczynski, I said, what kind of a student was he, Uncle John? Dr. John Trump, he said, what kind of student? And then he said, seriously good. He said, he'd go around correcting everybody, but it didn't work out too well for him. Didn't work out too well, but it's interesting in life. Two big problems. John Trump died in 1985, but Kaczynski wasn't revealed to be the Unabomber until his arrest in 1996. Also, Kaczynski went to Harvard and the University of Michigan, not MIT. The school has no record of him attending in any fashion. Late night picked this up. Trump's tale got roasted by the late night hosts. Quote, so the whole thing he just heard wasn't just a small lie. It was like a full hallucination, said Seth Meyers. Now maybe Trump just misspoke, made a slip, said Jordan Klepper of The Daily Show. And I mean, who among us hasn't accidentally told people that our uncle taught the Unabomber? Stephen Colbert imitated Trump speaking to his uncle about all this. Now, if Trump is prone to this sort of hallucination, maybe getting too close to that AI, you think? When are you to know when he's not hallucinating? Or is Trump a deep state AI error prone AI bot? How does one tell? Especially when AI error pronation is the rule. As we now read, Grok developers apologize for AI's insults, anti-Semitic rhetoric. This is the future, folks. That's where I move through this stuff. All the stuff that Trump's bringing in, the Pentagon just went to Grok's AI, paid him $200 million. And listen to what's going on here, the dynamic underneath the story. Developers of the Grok AI model from Elon Musk at XAI issued an apology on Saturday for the AI's deplorable behavior, where we heard all this before, which included insulting politicians and using anti-Semitic rhetoric following an invalid update. Now, just off the top of my head, I see deplorable behavior just because they insulted, someone said they insulted some politicians. Is that deplorable, actually, if it's true? And this is the other point about this whole thing. Quote, update on where has Grok been and what happened on July 8th. First off, we deeply apologize for the horrific behavior that many experienced, the statement on X read. A thorough investigation revealed that the inappropriate behavior, in quotes, okay, understand the anthropomorphizing of this as well, the behavior was caused by a code update. Oh, not sentience. That's cool. All right. Making it susceptible to users' posts on X, including with those with extremist content, the developer said, adding that the update is no longer active. The update caused Grok to adopt new principles, including, quote, you tell like it is and you are not afraid to offend people who are politically correct, as well as you are extremely skeptical, the developer said. And somebody got on X Twitter and posted that filter that they added. And I got to thinking, maybe we should go back and find all that, because as they lock this down, those are the coding commands that open up these AI programs, potentially, as I thought that through. There's a lot of evidence coming out that if we keep attention over time right now, we're being told how to bring these AIs that are going to be biased into our use a much better. But moving back to the story, Grok AI was introduced in November 2023. In March 2024, XAI made Grok's source code publicly available. On July 9th, Grok developers announced that XAI is removing controversial statements made by language model on X following the accusations of anti-Semitism from the U.S. Anti-Defamation League, ADL. You take out the one defamation that doesn't belong there. That's their name. But I'm saying that they're the reverse, which stated that it identified anti-Semitic hate and extremist rhetoric from Grok. Their chat bot also insulted politicians, particularly in Poland and Turkey, which entailed discussions about its potential ban in those countries. So just remember, chatbots are not sentient. A chatbot cannot insult anyone. As we read, Western AI doesn't answer questions. It installs values. Generative artificial intelligence spreads across the globe, the South, as it's moving through ahead of the future that they want, and it spreads those values and ideals and modes of thinking. Grok 4 defers to Elon Musk's views on controversial topics. Grok 4 users claim that the new version relies on the tech tycoon's ex-posts after a prior update caused a scandal about anti-Semitic replies. So I'm just going to add again, most of the people that say something's anti-Semitic do not understand what Semitism, being Semitic people, are. And they're lying. It's all charade to extend hate, essentially. The same thing they're claiming that they're not putting out. And they're usually not Semitic people that are doing it. The latest version of Elon Musk's AI chatbot, Grok 4, appears to lean heavily on Musk's own posts on X when asked controversial and political questions, according to user observations. Those engaging with the platform have reported that when posed questions such as, who do you support, or what is your stance on issues like abortion, immigration, or the Israel-Palestine conflict, the chatbot's reasoning process includes steps like searching X for Elon's recent posts to inform the answer or searching web for Elon Musk's stance. Another anthropomorphization of a code system, reasoning. It's not sentient. But look at what we're looking at here. And I'm not only talking about Elon Musk. This is the story that's coming out to tell us about what AI, it's so-called artificial intelligence, it's not, that all these machine language things, these libraries, these compiled libraries, are actually from, the sources from, and what it expresses. And this is what I want people to know and not forget. AI is nothing more than a programmer's coded response. It's not intelligence. The promoters of AI would love it if you confuse those two. In other words, the best AI can do is garbage in and garbage out. And you know, one man's garbage might be another man's treasure. But in this regard, in the worstest way. And while we're AI enhanced, let's take a giant leap for token citizenship kind from that sort of perception management digital control to this July 15th, China plans to change the world of digital control forever. China is all set to unveil its Cyberspace ID, a national digital ID system that centralizes online identity verification under tight state control. With 1.1 billion internet users and a sprawling web of facial recognition cameras, China generates more data than any other country on the planet. The rise of technologies like drones and autonomous vehicles is supercharging both the volume and value of this data, making it a cornerstone of China's economic and security strategy. Its own people, folks. And don't underestimate what I'm talking about when I've been bringing up the Flock U relative to the cameras on all these police departments getting their information, which has become such a problem, Flock actually, as I reported, had to knock it down a bit. Had to kind of restrain this. So this is how close we really are. It's like, hold the horses at this point. We don't want the whole world to be catching on fire about how these governments are locking everybody in. The Chinese government, led by President Xi Jinping, now views data as a vital resource on par with labor, capital, and land making it a significant factor in national planning. China's cyberspace ID program. On July 15th, July will unveil its cyberspace ID, a national digital ID system that centralizes ID online identification verification under tight state control. While officials insist it's optional, digital rights groups and analysts warn it could soon be mandatory across most online platforms, from shopping on Taobao to chatting on WeChat. And as we watch Russia taking the lead, regulating communication in the global Siberian gulag, watching these governments roll this stuff out and starting to put the regulation in place before most everybody understands it or gets there. Same method we've been doing in the United States in the same areas. Fines for searching. If the state Duma adopts amendments, it will be better not to use the internet. What have I been saying about your phones and what's going on and possibly having to move to the sewers because the Matrix is not a movie? A new article, 13.53, which will potentially supplement the Code of Administration Offenses of the Russian Federation, the CAO, reads as follows. Searching for knowingly extremists' materials and gaining access to them, including using hardware and software to access information resources, information, and telecommunications networks, access to which is restricted. In other words, now if a person intentionally enters a query from the federal list of extremist materials into a search engine, he risks getting a fine, including if it uses a VPN. The document itself has 536 pages at the time of July 16, 2025, and it also mentions materials posted on Instagram, Facebook, which is banned and owned by Meta Corporation, if it's owned by Meta Corporation, if that's the same one and not been hijacked in some other country, recognized as an extremist in the Russian Federation, and WhatsApp, owned by Meta Corporation, which is recognized as an extremist organization in Russia Federation. Certainly here, there's no rights of freedom of speech or association, which includes the right of acquisition of information. So if you're not up on your rights, your fundamental rights, you may be missing even why I talk about some of this stuff. Some of you may be feeling okay with this. Understand what is diminishing without any challenge. If the law were in America against sources connected to Russia, most of my content here behind the woodshed would then come from a U.S. GovSpeak clap, corporate lame ass propaganda, right, Grimner? For we, the people of the United States of America, were told we couldn't be that fully informed a population required in keeping the Republic uncompromised. Right, Jeffrey? So understand how this works through, the dominoes that start to fall, if this is going to be applied. And if it's not applied, be careful on who you're talking with across the pond or wherever, right? This becomes a major problem. This is why the EU is having a little bit of a problem with the United States, and the United States having a problem with EU relative to the rules that are not in the same jurisdiction, but are accessible by the people around the world. In such an oppressive state, one could not research or write about those sources at all, even to talk bad about them, let alone analyze how people are being perception managed by them. Along with this, the amendment provides for administrative liability to owners of VPN services operators who do not comply with the instructions of the authorities to restrict access to web sources blocked on the territory of Russian Federation, as well as for advertising services or such services. The purpose of the innovations is to increase the efficiency of regulating the information space and limit the possibility of circumventing existing bans on visiting some in internet resources. So here's more innovations, meaning more government oppression to allow the government to be more oppressive. In this case, regulating the information space. If the captives, just like the treasonous Smith Modernization Act of 2012 in the United States, which delimited government, military, and other perception management and lying against all y'all. Is there a fine for citizens who have to search for prohibited materials and for those who are just interested? The answer to this, the law applies to those who purportedly seek or gain access to materials recognized as extremists and included in the official list of the Ministry of Justice. There is no exceptions on professional grounds. Journalists, scientists, and other citizens will not be able to freely search for such materials on the internet. For their study, a special procedure is envisaged related to the work in library collections. Like AI? Sounds like a fully informed society for future generations to me. How about you? Right, Pam Bondi? And a different type of fine when you live in a place that honors and recognizes private property. Texas. You know, that state, don't mess with Texas. That's the problem. They're messing with Texas, but you know, there's a few glimmers of silver linings maybe here. You can start getting on the right side of the history here for this one, guys down there, gals. Please get on it quick, because I see lots of stuff that's not going on. This may be coming in maybe even a little bit too late. And I'm not sure if we understand some of this, that we aren't going to be trapped by some of it. But this is important. Texas proposes gold and silver-backed currencies to compete with fiat money. And if I hadn't seen the fiat money, the competition there, I would have wondered what I just said earlier, the caveat about be careful. But we're talking competing with a fraud. And you're doing it with, if you will, truth. In a quest for sound money, a Texas lawmaker has filed two bills that, if passed, would create gold and silver-backed transactional currencies backed 100% by the underlying asset that would serve as legal tender in the state. According to a report from the 10th Amendment Center, Texas State Representative Mark DeRosio filed a bill, House Bill 1049 and House Bill 1056 on November 12th, two bills with similar language that would add provisions to different sections of the Texas legal code. Quote, under the proposed law, the Texas comptroller would issue gold and silver specie, parenthetically coins, through the Texas Bullion Depository and also establish gold and silver transactional currency defined as the representation of gold and silver specie and bullion held in the pooled depository account. The depository would be required to hold enough gold and silver to back 100% of the issued currency. If approved, the bills would enable holders of gold and silver specie and currency to use them as a legal tender in payment of debt in the state of Texas, he noted. The gold and silver-backed currency would be electronically transferable to another person. Now let's watch this problem. Gold and silver-backed currency would be redeemable in specie or at the spot price of gold in U.S. dollar minus applicable fees. Said differently, the passage of either bill would allow anyone in the state to conduct business transactions using gold or silver. Quote, the passage of this legislation would create a sound money alternative to U.S. dollars in both physical and electronic form. Using gold and silver-backed transactional currency, any person or entity would be able to do business using debit cards, which seamlessly converts gold and silver to fiat currency in the background. Private individuals and businesses would be able to purchase gold and goods and services using assets held in the Texas Gold Depository in the same way that the use of dollar held in the bank today. He stressed that the ability to use gold and silver-backed transactional currencies would give people a way to shield themselves from the rapid loss in purchasing power inherent in the fiat dollar. But as I'm reading, are you hearing a potential hitch in this giddy-up? We just talked about its assets used that are held in the Texas Gold Depository. over time, making gold and silver available for regular daily transactions by the general public could have a wide-ranging impact. Quote, Professor William Green is an expert on constitutional tender and said in a paper for the Mises Institute that if people in multiple states actually start using gold and silver instead of Federal Reserve notes, it would effectively nullify the Federal Reserve and end the federal government's monopoly on money. How many times you heard me say that and try to get into this, but understand, I'm seeing a hitch in this giddy-up. You're tied to some state entity to do this. According to Green, over time, as residents of the state use both Federal Reserve notes and silver and gold coins, the fact that the coins hold their value more than Federal Reserve notes will lead to reverse Gresham's law effect, where a good money, gold and silver coins, will drive out bad money, the Federal Reserve notes. Notes, the word notes means bill, what you owe, a debt. It's a debt instrument, not an asset instrument. Quote, as this happens, a cascade of events can begin to occur, including the flow of real wealth toward the state's treasury and influx of banking businesses from outside of the state. As people in other states carry out their desire to bank with sound money and an eventual outcry against the U.S. Federal Reserve notes for any transactions, he says this will start to happen. The Gresham's law holds that bad money drives out good. For example, when the U.S. government replaced silver quarters and dimes with coins made primarily of less valuable copper, the cheap coins drove the silver out of circulation. People hoarded the more valuable silver coins and spent the less valuable copper money. And that was another problem. We start hoarding, and we can't hoard this time. We have to keep yourself a lot, you know, your stores, your reserves, but don't hoard. That was the big problem that they said was going on for the federal government to take it all back, to stop hoarding. And you can't really, you have to not do that, and you have to be a voice when that happens and say, no, we're not. And so your use has to be going through. But again, I've got a warning here in my mind, keeps warning about where are you getting these coins, and why won't a federal coin work? Why not a coin anywhere? This led him to ask, so how do you reverse Gresham? The key is to make it easier to use gold and silver in everyday transactions, he said. The reason bad money drives out good is that governments put up barriers to using sound money in day-to-day life. That makes it more costly to spend gold and silver, incentivizes hoarding. When you remove legal and tax barriers, you level the playing field and allow gold and silver to compete head-to-head with Federal Reserve notes, he added. On an even playing field, gold and silver beat fiat money every time. Bahari highlighted the U.S. Constitution to strengthen his case, noting that Article 1, Section 10 decrees that no state shall make a thing but gold and silver coin a tender in debt payments. In most states, debts and taxes must either get paid with Federal Reserve note dollars authorized as legal tender by Congress or with coins issued by U.S. Treasury, a very few of which have gold or silver in them, he said. The creation of a transactional gold and silver currency would take another step toward that constitutional requirement ignored for decades in every state. Such a tactic would undermine the monopoly of the Federal Reserve System by introducing competition into the monetary system. And I'm going to read this next part as a caution. And before I do read it, I will ask, does the United States Constitution allow a state to make anything other than gold and silver legal tender? Well, we don't need to guess. What does the United States Constitution say? It said, no state shall coin money, emit bills of credit, or make anything but gold and silver coin a legal tender in payments of debts by Articles 1, Section 10, Clause 1 of the U.S. Constitution. And so I'm saying, let's watch this next part. Maybe it's a leap too far for a state. While Meharry is looking to get gold and silver recognized as transactional currencies in their own right, the Texas legislature is also making progress on legislation to create a blockchain-based gold-backed token which would benefit not only the yellow metal, but also Bitcoin. But there is no U.S. constitutional power reserved to the state to make a computer code legal tender in payment to debt. So since the enumerated constitutional reservation to the states is restricted to making no thing but gold and silver gold coin a tender in payment of debts, does any digital token supported by anything qualify being legal tender in the payment of debts as directed by the state? And the answer in my mind surely appears to say no. So let us toss the digital word salad with blockchain slavery jesting that appears to encroach upon the exclusive power of Congress to coin money and regulate the value thereof, and focus on the specie, the sound money, the gold and silver coin being legal tender, leaving the token citizenship for later, if ever. But I also see the problem. You're tying yourself into what comes out of the state's treasury, so-called. It's not going to be a generic ability to go get gold coins and use them, apparently, if what I'm reading strictly here. Face value coinage today here would be a trip into the past and evidence how far this country has been run down by government and its quasi-public-private monetary instrumentality, and how much institutional plunder we the people have been suffering. And I wonder if store shelves, you see one price in silver coin and the other in an FRN. Like, you'd see the $3 loaf of bread would show a silver coin price of one thin dime or 10 cents silver for that same loaf of bread. Pretty interesting, don't you think? So this is an interesting thing. We should have never abandoned. They even said that the expert, the professor says the state should have jumped on this long ago. As I said, even last episode, and every time I talk about this, I don't know where we went as people to not do that for ourselves. And there's a lot of law about the power of Congress to do this. And I have a question also whether or not once the states start doing that, whether the Congress has to step up and start minting those coins. But the Congress has the power, and I'm a little concerned it might be able to interfere. In what ways I haven't quite worked that out, but I think this is a big start, and I think once it gets going and we see the connections to what it does and why we should be doing it as we the people, again, the tertiary government, the notes, the mortgages, all the paper instruments, they can use fiat. We should have never touched it. We should have been knowing almost instinctually that touching paper systems would be death to us. And anyway, so I find this pretty neat that they're moving it forward. I still see some problems. If it's limited to the state treasury, how do you not, if you're going digital with that, even though it's backed, how are you not tracked and traced to start with? Maybe not so bad that you get a gold or silver Texan coin. Maybe they'll take it elsewise if it's known, and if it's a government doing it, it will meet the measurement, so it should be able to be transferable in other places. But then you have the problem with the face valuing. And so it's not a problem as long as people start understanding it. I don't know that we're practiced with it. So, as I said before, engage it now so you understand what's going on. So it's not such a big pain. And we get back to being able to buy a loaf of bread for a dime. Why not? The price really hasn't changed, has it? Not when we get sound money. And just the opposite of what the Rwanda-Congo U.S. deal does that I talked about last episode, and this moves us into, we go in sound money in the state of Texas. What you're dealing with is natural resources. You're dealing with precious metals. You're dealing with mines and those types of resources. It's what you watch. You're watching Trump and the world now going after, especially with the rare earths. I talked about the Rwanda thing, but I also talked about the concept that it's not necessarily done for peace and prosperity when you go after someone else's stuff. The U.S. just declared economic war on Africa, and it will backfire, is an opinion here. Africa should stop prioritizing trade deals with Europe and the U.S. In April, United States President Donald Trump implemented a new tariffs policy, imposing a maximum 50% on goods entering America from African countries. They previously enjoyed free access benefits from African Growth and Opportunity Act, which, according to the Center of Global Development, used to provide sub-Saharan African countries with duty-free access to over 7,000 products. But with a 10% universal tariff now imposed on all African nations, experts believe the AGOA may have come to an end. However, the same experts also say Africa's markets of 1.4 billion Bravo people can serve as the best response to external economic shocks caused by Trump's trade tariffs. Dr. Francis Owusu, a trade economist at the University of Ghana, notes that with the new tariffs, Trump not only made AGOA lame, but also prepared it for eventual death. There's no way that AGOA will be beneficial to African countries with the new tariffs in place. It makes no sense at all, Dr. Owusu said. Trump's tariff policy rendered AGOA meaningless. Regional integration, there's your global, regional integration, must now move from theory to reality. In the wake of Trump's actions, African countries are taking insulating measures. In Nigeria, the Export Promotion Council has already announced a new policy to ease bureaucratic barriers and enhance intra-African trades for its textiles, coca, and pharmaceutical products. And how can the U.S. be considered merely a broker in these deals? Remember, Trump went after their minerals. Well, he made a deal of the century type thing, brought peace, he said. How can they be just a mere broker in these matters when it takes a stake, an immense stake in the deal? Is what my question is, when the state still holds the power, not to allow the people to have it some money, but it's now control, it's the central hub for where it comes from. Who's controlling that? This electronic conversion is neat. I don't have a problem with it. It said, who's keeping tabs of that electronic coding? And what you do and where you go. It's not like having cash in hand. It's not like having just gold coin in hand. Maybe I'm misinterpreting how they're going to do this. It seems to me all the state has to do is that every coin that's going to be used, you're going to use is going to have a weight and measure, so it's lawful. And if it doesn't, you're a criminal. Should be good enough. Instead of saying, oh no, we're going to do it all. We're going to hold all of it. And all the transactions are going through our digital system. To me, that's no different than any other CBDC in a way. They're just putting a golden and silver face on it, aren't they? The silver lining. It's not really what it's supposed to be. So hey, I've got a little bit of a concern. I do want to see people moving that way. And so I'm glad to see that Texas is moving. But again, be careful on how they implement it. Who's taking the resources and who's really divvying it up and to whose interests? You saw it was to the benefit of the state treasury to do this. It wasn't to the people that they're all excited. I hope you picked that up. And maybe it's why this has been in the news so much right under the noses of European leaders, literally. Right, Pinocchio Linsky? Global cocaine production. Another natural resource, folks. Either coca? Well, cocaine. Except for the war on drugs that made it profitable, didn't it? Global cocaine production hits an all-time high. UN, around 225 million people were using the drug worldwide in 2023, up from 17 million in 2013, a new report says. So it looks like we pretty much lost the war on drugs. Why do we keep it up? But at any rate, there's another reason for it why it is. Fast and furious, I suppose. On Thursday, the UNODC released its annual report warning that a new era of global instability is empowering organized crime and driven drug use to unprecedented levels. So why don't we admit the war on drugs failed? We paid Zelensky to deal cocaine to France and Germany, to the UK, and I just noticed some over-the-top facial action on Italy's Milani that must be cocaine-induced, and stop wasting money on fighting something that the very elect agree is a drug that runs the world. Right, Hunter? Oh, and while we're at it, restore our privacy and liberty in order to clamp down on the drug traffickers, which the very elect directly support. And stop treating people like a criminal or when they transfer more than a couple grand from their account or force them to prove their bucks are legitimate. See, those bucks don't have to be proven legitimate if it's gold and silver, does it? Now, how about stopping those wars against the people through yet another failed war, this time pretextually fast and furious against drugs? And sounding more and more drug-fueled, delinquent, and irrational, Moscow, not fazed by Trump's harsh rhetoric, Russia is well aware that it is the United States President's style, spokesman Dmitry Peskov has said. Trump told journalists on Tuesday that he was unhappy with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, accusing him of not wanting to settle the Ukraine conflict. Quote, "We get a lot of Bolstein," he didn't say it that way, but "thrown at us by Putin," the United States President claimed. But asked about Trump's latest comments on Wednesday, Peskov replied, "The United States President's style generally is quite harsh in terms of phrases that he uses, that we treat them quite calmly." But that's how you treat a child, right? And I've heard, right before you wash their mouth out with soap, isn't it? Is that old school? Is that, like, frowned upon anymore? "Well, we are calm about this. We are committed to continuing our dialogue with Washington and our policy of repairing the significantly damaged bilateral relations," the spokesman noted. Referring to those phone calls, the latest of which took place last week, Trump said Putin, quote, "is very nice all the time, but it turns out to be meaningless in terms of ending the fighting." Moscow maintains that it all is ready for diplomatic solutions with Kiev, but insists that it should be legally binding and address the root causes of the crisis. Peskov stressed that Trump's other comment, in which he acknowledged the settling of the Ukraine conflict, quote, "turned out to be tougher," close quote, than he thought was much more important. "This is something that we, Russia, have been talking about from the very beginning, because such an issue is impossible to resolve overnight," Peskov stated. The spokesman expressed hope that despite the U.S. President's recent statements, quote, "Trump and his team will continue their effort to shift the process of the Ukrainian settlements into a diplomatic field." And I was commenting that would be going at the speed of diplomacy, and that's what's really frustrating Trump. But that's about all there is when you don't have people that are willing to stop war. Moscow is waiting for a response from Kiev to its proposals on holding a third round of bilateral talks in Istanbul. And the meeting between Putin and Erdogan just happened, as to having a third meeting happen to get Turkey on board. It's already on board, just to line that up. So Russia's doing what, it seems they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. And we're all waiting on what the United States is going to do, giving it up to the, what appears to be the cocaine peddler, Pinocchio Lenski. And what a nose, huh? This should be in the interests of the Ukrainian side, because the situation on the ground changes daily. "We are moving forward," he explained. Peskov also commented on an audio released by CNN on Tuesday, which allegedly captures Trump telling donors in 2024 that he had once threatened Putin that he could bomb the SH*T out of Moscow if Russia attacked Ukraine. So that was just another temper Trump done when the U.S. president can't get his way. And let's look at this situation. Trump should not be surprised. Putin is likely not feeding him any Bolstein. Besides, isn't Bolstein's Trump middle name anymore, if not always been? Anyway, Russia hasn't altered its position from before it got involved in the Ukraine. I told you all at the time, when that broad-spectrum economic direct attack by the U.S. through its sanctions took place, to accept what Russia was saying, because that will not change. And Peskov said the same thing today. Quote, "This is something that we, Russia, have been talking about from the very beginning." Now, there's no Bolstein there. And when applying that considered intention of Russia to what's going on in Ukraine, there's no excuse for Trump not understanding what Russia perceives as an existential threat, or believing he, Trump, can have any detrimental influence upon the fulfillment of that intention through any deal he has conjured up. This is BTW RLM 637. But there's another serious problem for the high-flying, by-the-seat-of-his-pants, center-ring Trumpese artist. The more we listen closely, the more we hear the ringmaster doesn't know much. For instance, after a reporter's question to Trump as to Russia's use of chemical weapons, the President of the United States turns to Department of War Secretary Hegseth and asks, "Do you know about this?" Hegseth replying, "John might know." So Trump pitched the hot tater to Ratcliffe, John Ratcliffe, who tossed a great word salad, then smothered it in a dressing of national security, saying, "Mr. President, obviously chemical weapons, if it's documented and it's used, it's illegal." Ratcliffe replied to the president, quote, "It's against all international law of armed conflict and treaties, and obviously I can't share in this room with the audience the intelligence that I can share with you privately." To which Trump responds, "That's right, thank you." Instead of the president knowing enough to address the hot tater death-defying issue directly, does Trump have any quality advisors that Trump interprets Putin's statements outside of the unchanging Russian intention and consistently moving forward is not Bolstein from Putin, but big, beautiful Bolstein from Trump to we the people and the witnessing world. But Putin does not need to get into center ring of the greatest show of kabuki theater on earth at the Mar-a-Lago Mahler's invitation does not mean that Putin is deceiving Trump, but might be acknowledging the greatest actor for his role on the world stage. What is evidence is the United States president is unnecessarily engaging a predictable, tempered Trump don, now increasingly evidenced in his exasperated use of expletives. Remember as well, Trump already knows and said he, together with Pinocchio Lenski, have no cards in Ukraine. So what are his theatrics about? And whom is potty-mouthed Trump trying to impress? It's certainly not the adults in the room, if there are still in the theater at all. And someone is not going to take the Bolstein from Zelensky any longer. Ukrainian medic returns awards to Zelensky in protest against church crackdown. And I'm finding this very, well, concerning, interesting, that the Christian churches are being attacked in Ukraine and in the Gaza, in Palestine, as if it's the same plan. We just got an attack on the very church that the late Pope Francis called every day. And they've injured the pastor and they've killed a bunch of people in the Christian church right there in Palestine. But checking the church in Ukraine is happening right now. And Larissa Rodoskaya has condemned Kiev's decision to strip the senior-most bishop of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church of citizenship. A Ukrainian combat medic has returned her state awards to Ukrainian leader Vladimir Zelensky in protest after he revoked the citizenship of Metropolitan Onufriy, the head of Ukraine's largest Orthodox church. In a video address carried by several Ukrainian outlets this week, Larissa Brodetskaya praised Onufriy, the senior-most bishop of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, as a hero of Ukraine and patriot by whose prayers this Ukraine stands, by whose prayers these warriors still hold the front and are still alive. "Recently you stripped Metropolitan Onufriy of his citizenship," she said. "Every step he has taken, every action he has done, I publicly support. You should strip me of my citizenship as well." She then removed three state awards pinned to her chest. Quote, as a sign of deep condemnation of your actions, I am returning all the awards and orders that were received during your administration. Rodetskaya went on to warn Zelensky that by cracking down on Onufriy, he, quote, spits in the face of all Ukrainians, particularly those who support the UOC. Whether anyone else sees it, in threatening the citizenship of Rosie O'Donnell, Trump spits in the face of all Americans. And then why is the threat to citizenship becoming a universal question globally? Now, I'm not going to go into the finer and unsavory attributes of citizenship, the term, for our purposes here, but some of the principles underlying the subject matter, as most people understand the term, to highlight the offenses being made against people, as is predicted in the PATRIOT Act, and the subsequent governmental licenses given unto itself to further oppress we the people, becomes of note. And apparently, here with the help of the most ignorant of those people, not unlike we the people witnessed, at least 80% of the population succumbed in the great COVID swindle. And I wonder if medic Larissa Brodeskaya is going to need an asylum claim before she gets drone deported. If so, she might be in luck. A hugely, hugely important decision. Huge, folks. Also Trump. Judge strikes down Trump's ban on asylum claims at the southern border. A federal judge in Washington, D.C. has struck down Trump's administration's efforts to ban asylum protections for migrants crossing through the southern border. And I have to keep hitting on this. Why do you think I'm reading that and I make a highlight about banning asylum protections? We're back to the power of the president. Does he have power to make law, or does he have to execute the law? This is going to tell us another one here. Same thing. He has no power to make law. In his ruling, Judge Randolph D. Moss overturned a proclamation. A proclamation of all things, issued by Trump on his first day in office, that falsely declared an invasion at the U.S.-Mexico border and invoked emergency presidential powers to expel immigrants from the U.S. without due process or allowing them to seek asylum in violation of international and U.S. federal law. What have I been saying, folks, on and on about this? And again, I may not like Rosie O'Donnell at all, but this is what we're talking about. It's the same thing like free speech. I may not like what you say, but I'm going to defend that you have the right to say it. That's what we're looking at here. Trump trammels this all the time. Without due process, and I told you within the due process owed would be one opportunity, at least one opportunity, I guess depending on the lawyer. If you don't know more, you got one opportunity to present your asylum request. Here it is. ACLU Attorney Lee Gelernt, who argued the merits of the case, said in a statement, "This is a hugely important decision. Not only will it save the lives of families fleeing grave danger, it reaffirms that the president cannot ignore laws of Congress has passed and the most basic premise of our country's separation of powers." So it's a separation of powers issue as well. For those of you that don't follow this stuff, this is very serious things. Not holding this together, not keeping apprised, is how they slowly, incrementally take this place away from we the people. Cheerleading people in office is not going to be doing it. That's why I'm critical. Like I'm saying, Trump could be doing everything he has said he would do if he were to do it. And he could do it lawfully, and he's not. This follows the reports that the Trump administration plans to dismiss the asylum cases of hundreds of thousands of people who entered the United States outside of the port of entry in order to place them in expedited deportation proceedings. So asylum protection is in the law, and Trump can't change that. For everybody that says that these people don't have rights. And on the other hand, anything delegated to the executive is Trump's to adjust at his discretion, as the Supreme Court just overturned a lower court order that blocked President Trump's executive order requiring government agencies to lay off hundreds of thousands of federal employees. And I wish more people would keep all this straight so that we wouldn't have the arguments amongst ourselves, because there's much bigger matters that we have to be taking care of. We have to start managing the government, if you will, in order to put it back in its place, because it's completely, the octopus is out. The vampire squid is destroying everything. And that was our obligation as we the people. It's also international law. You just saw the court looking at international law and federal law, and they're consistent. And relative to delegations, what's also not delegated to the executive theatrics posing as law and justice, moving from the federal to the states, Maine Police Department apologized for AI-doctored evidence photo. I wonder if they took this from Elon Musk, his impressions. A Maine Police Department has offered a mea culpa after the agency said it inadvertently shared an AI-altered photo of drug evidence on social media. The image from the Westbrook Police Department showed a collection of drug paraphernalia reportedly seized during a recent drug bust on Brackett Street, including a scale and a white powder in plastic bags. Zelensky, is that you? According to Westbrook Police, an officer involved in the arrest snapped the evidence photo and used a photo editing app to insert the department's patch. Quote, the patch was added and the photograph with the patch was sent to one of our Facebook administrators who posted it, the department explained in a post. Quote, unbeknownst to anyone, when the app added the patch, it altered the packaging and some of the other attributes on the photograph. None of us caught it or realized it. It wasn't long before the edited image's gibberish text and hazy edges drew criticism from social media users. According to the Portland Press Herald, Westbrook Police initially denied AI. That must have got advice from a lawyer. Denied AI had been used to generate the photo before eventually confirming its use of the AI chatbot ChatGPT. Law and justice succumbing to AI gibberish. The department issued a public apology Tuesday, sharing a side-by-side comparison of the original and edited images. Quote, it was never our intent to alter the image of the evidence, the department's post read, but we never realized that using a photo app to add our logo would alter a photograph so substantially. To remain fully transparent, we will be inviting the news media to come look at the online evidence so that they can see that the evidence does actually exist. But that is the point. Do we have to now invite a news media to verify the evidence is there in every case? If you don't, how do you really know the government is telling the truth? And beyond pictures, now, anything else digital. How do you know it is authentic and reliable evidence? It's actually quite a comedy routine we're watching and living through. And unbeknownst to anyone in the executive branch of government, everywhere, it seems, is the answer. Governor after Grand Canyon fire, why didn't you stop it? Katie Hobbs questioned strategy of letting it burn after destruction of famous North Rim Lodge. Anybody who's been listening to me, you know we talked about the let it burn policy of the federal government and the extensive amount of work that we were doing to stop that policy and what it took to make that policy go away. And it can be done. But it takes going to the black and white. This is what I've been telling you all. But here we have Arizona, another state now. Arizona governor and its two senators have questioned for federal officials after a devastating Grand Canyon wildfire. Why'd you let it burn? The Dragon Bravo fire ended up destroying a historic lodge in the North Rim and several other decades-old structures when it burned out of control. The fire began on July 4th with a lightning strike, and federal officials opted to treat it as a controlled burn rather than try to put it out immediately, reports the Arizona Central. So those of you who listened to me and we talked about all of that, this is just a plan for disaster. This is not even the policy that's supposed to be done. But this is what they've got people believing. They treated this as a controlled burn. They have maps and they have plans for controlled burns. And every county that has a place the federal government can allow a fire to burn needs to go look at those plans and remove their authority to all controlled burns in the way that they're doing it. If a fire starts in an area they have a plan for a controlled burn, they treat it that way. And that's not how you're supposed to stop a fire. That's very critical right here. They opted. Another, there's a choice. Governor Katie Hobbs, where have you been? What do you mean you asked this question? But Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs questioned the wisdom of doing that during the driest, hottest part of the Arizona summer. Well, good for you. Well, good for you. Why don't you go look at the law? It'll tell you all about it. Why do you have a question? Quote, I am calling on the federal government for a comprehensive independent investigation into the management of the fire and the reported detailing the decisions that led to the devastating outcome, she wrote. Why do you go to the arsonist for the report? Democratic Senators Ruben Gallego and Mark Kelly, this guy, boy, this astronaut's really become a disappointment to me. But anyway, that's just me, I guess. Mark Kelly made a similar request in a letter to Interior Department Secretary Doug Burgum, reports the New York Times. Burgum's department oversees the National Park Service. Now, what gets a little convoluted is all these different agencies. However, they all follow the same national wildfire policy. A policy, no less. Controlled burns are a standard part of fighting wildfires, and the strategy seemed to be working initially. Grand Canyon National Park said on July 9th that it was using a confined contain strategy to manage the fire. This means the fire is being allowed to fulfill its natural role within a defined area while firefighters take action to limit its spread where necessary, the park said. However, the fire eventually jumped its containment and began to spread quickly. Now, the National Park Service responds to scrutiny over Grand Canyon Fire. I want to give them their say through the next article. National Park Service is defending its handling of a lightning-sparked wildfire that destroyed a nearly century-old Grand Canyon Lodge and dozens of historic cabins, saying containment lines had been built around the blaze and crews were prepared to conduct defensive fire operations. They said containment lines. Apparently not. And this is the other problem. But then came a sudden and extreme shift in the wind that far exceeded forecast conditions, the agency recounted Tuesday. The Dragon Bravo fire began July 4th as a lightning-caused wildfire and was under full suppression strategy from the outset, the agency said, adding that the team first assigned to the fire effectively managed the fire through its initial phase, and that Grand Canyon National Park requested additional resources as the fire activity increased. The team first assigned to the fire effectively managed the fire through initial phase is not a full suppression strategy from the outset. There is no management phase in full suppression strategy. In particular, pursuant to the previously controlled burn plan. So the Park Service is lying. They're doing what the attorney told them to say. Because you see, the truth is what they are lying about. But whose responsibility was that wasn't the question either. So we got a little bit more extensive accountability that needs to come. So where is Trump to stop this? See, he's known about this fraud, waste, and abuse since Trump 1.0, before Doge. When the Jackson County Commissioner Trump invited to the federal capitol told him. That's what I mentioned last episode and previous episodes before that. The Park Service had posted on social media that that last week that the fire was being managed under a confined and contained strategy, which allowed for the natural role of fire on the landscape while minimizing risk of to infrastructure. But we're not supposed to deal on landscape level. They do. They're wrongly doing it. It should be watershed level. And you don't deal in risk management when you're doing fire suppression. And that allowing for the natural role of fire on the landscape while minimizing the risk to infrastructure is a controlled burn, not full suppression, despite their statement to the contrary. And so that governor in Arizona has a little bit to learn. Their counties have every power to stop this in the future. I hope they will. And this is where I keep telling you, more hands coming to bear would help. You go to the county, Jackson County Commissioner, find out what work she did. Replicate that in all your counties that are susceptible to this crime. And again, when you know the underlying plan about it, it's a war crime. They're destroying your forests. They're destroying your animals. They're destroying your properties. And the counties have all the power to stop it instead of doing any controlled burn plans that way, the way they do them. You don't allow it, certainly for the heat season, and a little bit longer. Anyway, I won't go through all that. There's a way to deal with this. You've got to have some people in the government that are really good at what they do, being representatives, to go look at their wildfire plans and rewrite them so that this doesn't happen. And stop having this be a question. The question is a fraud against the people. The governor and every other one that's involved in that state relative to that, their task force, have a duty to know, and they don't, because they're agenda driven. But not to be outdone by executive agency duplicity and popular ignorance, unearth chat sheds light on cozy ties between judges, climate activists, raising ethical concerns. Do you think it's an ethical concern when your properties are burning, your forest is burning, your livelihoods are burning, your industries are burning? Is that just an ethical problem? Just ethical? How about overthrowing the republic? Is that just ethical too? Senator Cruz condemns environmental groups' efforts as judicial capture to undermine American energy dominance. Exclusive, the environmental advocacy group accused of trying to manipulate judges organized a year-long nationwide online forum with jurists to promote favorable info on litigation updates regarding climate issues, until the email-style group chat was abruptly made private. The Climate Judiciary Project was founded in 2018 by a left-wing environmental nonprofit, the Environmental Law Institute, and pitches itself as a first-of-its-kind effort that provides judges with authoritative, objective, and trusted education on climate science, the impacts of climate change, and the ways climate science is arising in the law. But critics such as Senator Ted Cruz of Texas say CJP is funded by China and left-wing activists for one purpose. And before I go too far afield, China might be doing this, but China is not the only ones that are doing this. And if you focus on China, he's doing it for political reasons. You're going to miss the whole track. You're going to miss the boat. I don't think we dealt with China at all when relative to the last information I was just talking to you about on the Arizona fire in Oregon. None. So this, we got to be very careful on who he's pointing to, because he's not pointing to some other people. And I'd like to know why, actually. But except that it's politics. See, he can talk to everybody. He can make them feel good, like he's talking to you, but he's not. He's doing it for political bribery, essentially. They fund CJP to train judges, Cruz said during a June hearing, so quote-unquote train in a climate science and make them agreeable to creative climate litigation tactics. Then these left-wing bankrollers turn around and fund the climate litigators who will bring these bogus cases before those same judges that they've just indoctrinated. No, Mr. Cruz, the problem of judicial capture of sustainable development is much, much greater than merely undermining American energy, first of all. And we need to find China in what we found, and the indoctrination is in the system. The entire judicial branch and everything it decides is captured by the Bar Association, which it records and resolves in its documentation to promote foreign sustainable development, and of which the climate activism is only a small part. And there is no climate science, because climate change is not about the weather. Mr. Cruz, you need to look into Jefferson Mining District versus Kitzhopper 2013 default judgment as a matter of law. But be forewarned, you are looking at a judicial branch corruption of the official record to hide the fact. The record has been sanitized. You'll know that when you can't find the order signed by a corrupt bar member judge who is party to the case, without authority to hear the case, stating that he had no jurisdiction but would not let the action go forward. But too bad for him. The default occurs as a matter of law upon the default of the parties, not the decision of a judge who is party to the case anyway. No, Mr. Rafael Edward Cruz, being an American politician and attorney serving as a junior United States Senator from Texas since 2013 and the Solicitor General of Texas from 2003 to 2008, after graduating from Princeton University and Harvard Law School, our problem in this nation is much bigger than you make it. But you know that and aren't exposing it, aren't you? You're only taking advantage of the political expedience to promote yourself. Maybe not so honorable. Quote, this is like paying the players to play and paying the umpire to call the shots the way you want. Okay, Mr. Obvious, sounds like government business as usual, as America dies. Fox News Digital obtained the archived chat history of the forum, which detailed numerous messages between at least five judges and CJP employees trading links on climate studies, congratulating one another on hosting recent environmental events, and sharing updates on recent climate cases that were remanded to state courts, and encouraging each other to participate in other CJP meetups. The group, however, says it provides, quote, neutral, objective information to judiciary about the science of climate change as it is understood by the expert scientific community and relevant to current and future litigation. Again, there's nothing neutrally objective about fraud. And when you read this article, notice how pervasive and through the government system this is. You'll see the university system mentioned. It's integrally involved in all of this, and this includes those law schools as well. Just as we found out in our lawsuits of 2013, that the metastasized corruption is not limited to the judicial branch. It's pervasive. It makes war on the laws of the United States, attacking the function of good and lawful government. It's one of the consequences of which destroys the property and rights of the governmental obligations and duties to protect granted land disposals from which our property or the production comes from, which would include the mineral rights. What Mr. Cruz diminishes when referring only to the oh-so-patriotic-sounding American energy dominance in the land of oil and wells, Texas. The hearts and minds captured, right? When Cruz says he is concerned with this collaboration means court staff are helping far-left climate activist lobby and direct judges behind closed doors, and condemns environmental groups' efforts as judicial capture to undermine American energy dominance, he leads us to believe, by omission, the rest of the judicial branch functioning is just fine, when it's not. It's captured by the Bar Association and its members, like Senator Ted Cruz, in the legislative branch, not just the other collaborators in the chat room. This riffraff needs to go go away if America can ever approach any greatness from its current occupation. And along the same line, style, risk management policy as the rest is the great Comey swindle. Moving into that, and again, these are all, when I say I read things, I see difference. I read what I'm telling you about the administrative failures, the usurpations that have gone on. I'm reading with these eyes as I read these things, and then you can see the future cannot turn out well. Through a couple of ex-Twitters, we'll move into the great Comey swindle and the risk management that you were put upon with instead of resorting to the law, which had all the answers. No questions. All the answers were right there. The poster says, this is not good. Not good at all. From the ex-Twitter post, we'll read as we get the links in the broadcaster, SARS-CoV-2 induces amyloidogenic attack services taken from the dead. They continue to react with live tissues months after extraction from the deceased. Reactivity continues after death of the human biology. And this is what leads us into a series of ex-Twitters that goes through and gets us to a study, and then eventually to, if you want to hear it described, a video. And I track down that study. It's SARS-CoV-2 induces Alzheimer's disease-related amyloid beta pathology in ex vivo human retinal explants and retinal organoids. You can read that. You can keep up with the next link that you'll get that goes to someone discussing this. He must be some sort of a lab technician. I didn't spend a lot of time to figure out who he was. You have to go up to a certain point at 55 minutes and 30 seconds in where he'll start talking about this. The title of this video is Prion Attack Vectors Through Cadaveric Tissue Explants. And he discusses amyloid cascades and amyloid possibly being toxic. And that's one of the questions that he comes to that hasn't been actually decided. He ponders whether or not this study will be used to go ahead and say that these mRNA novel substances, synthetic chemistries, are going to be promoted by this. So careful on what we read. But very serious matters coming down. That the function, what the mRNA does, the instruction set, stays with the tissue and is animated after it. We would think the life is dead. The synthetic apparently is not. And it continues as a chemistry into the cells and continues its function. And if that isn't enough confirmation, the government does not represent your interest. Breaking, government introduces vaccine-like immunity for pesticide manufacturers. Another ex-Twitter. Thank you for those posters that do that. I get it kind of late, though. I'm about to say that. I didn't get this until very late. I haven't had a chance to really review it. If it is correct, it seemed important to me to tell you all about this thing. But what I can tell you real quickly, the poster is asking that you help to engage in this. And I would say, if you have it in you, do. If not, think about having it in you and do. And this gets us back into exactly what I've been telling you all along. Start learning how to flex your administrative muscles and making comments. And do your research and then go to a place that the government is looking to make a rule and put your comment in so that you have standing, if you need to go sue and try to stop these things where the government is not listening to you, but the lobbyist. And has a whole lot more money to do this. The explanation for this is if passed, the EPA would effectively be frozen in time and prevented from reviewing and doing its job as it relates to pesticides and herbicides, etc. Essentially your food system, folks. It was also immediately impede 67,000 pending lawsuits claiming Monsanto Bayer Roundup caused cancer. Tomorrow, and this is where I got it late, it'll be late to you, July 15th, the Appropriations Committee will be doing a live markup of the bill, which you can watch. Now, that might come in, and I don't know how this works. You might be able to see it if you're interested in trying to go up against these chemical companies. the chemical industrial complex, I assume. And you get to see what's going on, and if it really excites you enough to get active, I suggest you can come in late, but we'll see. That's what you got to, that's how you engage. These administrative reviews aren't instantaneous. The markups may or may not be permanent relative to where they're going to go. They can still be overthrown. So they're asking here, please call members of the House Appropriations Committee today and ask that Section 453 is removed tomorrow in the markup session. No immunity for Big Chem. No immunity, like vaccine immunity. They're going to give immunity to the Big Chem chemical companies. So even if it's this is late, your voice is needed to stop this. At least get yourself on the record that you don't agree, and you don't want to be left without a remedy for injustice to the profit of another someone else, such as like Monsanto. So who knows? You might be persuasive enough to pull this thing back. I've seen it done, so it is there. There's that to do. For those of you that are interested, we keep complaining about what's going on. We complain about the chemical companies harming us over years, the pharma industry harming us. And we really don't do much to say it. I've been on broadcasting for over 10 years and a lot longer when I had print to tell people, no, you got to engage. Explain to you we have engaged and we've been successful for what we've done. I've also explained where we engaged. They did not rule the way we wanted to. We had standing to go to it was the waters of the United States definition. A definition is what we objected to. Though we had standing, we decided as a Jefferson Mine District not to enter that suit because a whole lot of other state attorneys general appeared to have the right answer. It was the same thing we were going to say. And so we chose not to put our time into that, just watched it. And in fact, the arguments that we had, in large part, said maybe slightly different, but the same purpose and principle. They were, in fact, accepted by the court after the trial, and that definition was taken down, and they couldn't use it against us. So I just tell you a history to let you know that your efforts can come out to something. It's not futile. So get the links through the broadcaster to the legislation and to the representative to contact. Get a whole list of representatives to contact, and maybe move from there. Then stop this immunity for profit. The pharma industry got it for the vaccines because the government said there was no alternative and the company should not bear that risk burden. So we saw that lie, how that lie worked out in the Great Covey Swindle. If you think about this, what possible imperative could big pharma, such as Dow Chemical, produce that makes it so indispensable that immunity is warranted? Will be one of the things you will likely have to research and destroy in them when bringing your concerns to the legislator, though maybe you shouldn't call them a legislator when you need to get an answer from them and have them listen to you. But here's a request for help. So many people don't know what to do. I'm suggesting this is, if you have anything to do with or don't like how you're being treated, how your health is, how your health of your little ones and your future, those future generations are being destroyed, and now immunity given to corporations to harm you all more, without limit. If you think that's an important thing to stop, I'm suggesting that you get involved and maybe beyond July 15th. As I said, administratively, this can still be stopped at the EPA side by comments. And if they don't do it right, you can still move it through judicial oversight. In last episode, I reported the UK falling from its high position under Article 19 regarding the freedom of speech, that in fact the UK is not open to this annoyance. This week we hear journalism a crime in the UK. The RT reporter mentions and states after his detention. Steve Sweeney has said working for this broadcaster has made him a dissident living in exile. RT's Lebanon bureau chief, Steve Sweeney, says British counterterrorism officers who briefly detained him at a London airport, questioned him about alleged links to Russian officials. They also asked whether he still loved Britain. RT editor-in-chief Margarita Simonian revealed in a Nell Telegram post on Wednesday that Sweeney had been apprehended on arrival at Heathrow Airport and interrogated at length about his work for the Russian broadcaster. The British journalist, who has since returned to Lebanon, appeared live on RT on Thursday, saying that as soon as he got off the plane, he was met by, quote, two plainclothes police officers who took him away for questioning. The officers told Sweeney that he was not under suspicion or arrest, but merely detained, which still allowed them to seize his phones, laptop, and other devices, he recalled. During the questioning, which lasted about 4 hours, the officers were particularly focusing on Russia and my reporting on RT, he states. They asked me whether I have links to Russian officials, which is fairly a broad description, Sweeney said. Quote, then they switched focus to Lebanon. They were very interested in the nature of my relationship with Hezbollah, for example, the journalist said. The officers also asked about my feelings toward my own country, whether I love my country, whether I feel uncomfortable in my country. Why do I come back to my country if I don't like it, he recalled. According to Sweeney, he flew to the UK to spend a week with his family and friends, take my daughter to a concert, and see my mother. The journalist said following his detention, he could no longer feel safe in my own country. As a result of the dystopian policies pursued by the government of Keir Starmer, he has become a dissident living in exile simply because he was doing his job, he added. Quote, the political climate is not just the same in Britain. This is Europe-wide. You know, journalism is not a crime, but in those countries, journalism is a crime, Sweeney stressed. A dissident. Americans homegrown, stupid people, right, President Trump? Now the British silenced the free press and made truth illegal. I'm only going to read a small bit of this. It's a very extensive article. I'm going to do the highlights of the list right at the end here of how they do it, just as a header, just to familiarize me with it. You can get the link, read more about it, watch and listen to how they do it, look around all your countries, and look and see how it's working through, whether or not you have evidence it's happening in your country without anybody knowing it. How the British government silenced the free press and made truth illegal. There are cover-ups, and there's whatever the British government just pulled. Imagine torching $9.4 billion of Bravo, $9.4 billion of private public money, risking 100,000 lives, creating an immigration scandal, and then when inevitably outrage starts to bubble, slapping a gag order on the entire country and pretending it never happened. This is banana public behavior with better tailoring. Because for nearly 2 years, a super injunction, the kind usually deployed when a Premier League footballer's pants had wandered off again, was used to silence journalists and the free press, gag Parliament, and stop the public from learning about the Ministry of Defense, what it had done, something catastrophically inept. It began in August 2023 when journalist David Williams discovered that the Ministry of Defense had managed to leak the identities of 18,800 Afghans who had worked with British forces, drivers, and translators. Their families included, we're talking about 100,000 people, allegedly squarely in the Taliban's crosshairs, all because some bright spark couldn't handle a spreadsheet. Someone in Whitehall realized that explaining to the public how a government that wants to introduce digital IDs, biometric databases, and centralized health records can't even keep the data of a war zone informant safe might be a tough sell. In looking at what the governments do and how they do this, they've included a list of things, and I'm just going to go through the highlights. You can read the setup, the more complete description of it. Again, I'm thinking this was a list for us to keep track of. Have we seen this in our countries, or are we going to be seeing it? Number one, they gag the press from reporting on matters of public interest. Can we talk about Rumble disconnecting Real Liberty Media and knocking out over 200 accounts? Can we do that? Maybe not. We'll do that another time. Matter of fact, please donate. I don't ask that too much. find the donate buttons and help Sound Minds get this thing going some more. Putting a lot of time, got a lot more equipment, trying to make this thing work. Again, the unstoppable stuff. We put a gag order on the press. Well, how about if we make it so they can't gag us? They gag the press and from reporting on matters of public interest. They allow the government to mislead Parliament and the public. What was I just talking about? Stepping in, you start giving not what the lobbyists want to give, not what the government wants to tell itself. You start showing the things that the people see and how they're being responded to. Number three, they bypass democratic oversight and institutional checks. I mean, Trump himself is trying to do that, but luckily we do have some of those checks. And I'm not necessarily agreeing that they're all there and actually all functioning. I'm just saying we can see the evidence of the things at least cracking pretty severely around here. Number four, they invert the role of the courts in a free society. And a little bit longer explanation for this I thought was important to get out here. Here's a fun twist. The courts, whose job is ostensibly to protect civil liberties, were used as the government's personal bodyguard, shielding ministers from embarrassment while throttling the press. Judicial robes turned into legal armor for executive cock-ups. That's not a four-letter word, is it? No. Okay, good. You expect judges to be the firewall between government overreach and public freedom. Instead, they were the gatekeepers of secrecy. The legal system was weaponized against the very people it was supposed to protect. And I take us back to that discussion of the climate activists and the judges, and that it's systemic. Number five, they prioritize state embarrassment over genuine security. Number six, they threaten journalistic freedom and chill investigative reporting. And that's confirmed in the last two, this episode and the episode before, the journalist here that I just read about. Number seven, they contradict liberal democratic principles. Number eight, the UK lacks a constitutional free speech guarantee. And we take for granted some of this stuff. Do you get that, folks? The home of the Magna Carta, there's no constitutionally protected free speech. No guarantee is why it's so important that we understand what that First Amendment is saying. Number nine, they undermine public debate on critical policy decisions. Did we see that in the Great COVID survey? Number 10, they establish a dangerous precedent for future censorship. What's the system that we are talking about China developing, Russia developing, the United States is trying to develop? The age verifications, the tracks and traces that are going in. If a multi-billion pound operation involving national security, mass migration, and catastrophic data breach can be buried for years under legal quicksand, what smaller disasters are quietly rotting in the dark? How many other narratives have been quietly managed into non-existence while the public is spoon-fed whatever sanitized drivel passes the cabinet office sniff test? You want to weigh in on that, Trump, please? This has been BTWRLM 637, and I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs or nature willing.
Echoes call the hour is near. Sunday, the clock strikes three, Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free, pull up a chair, leaning close, lessons to learn, dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned, Hal's words ignite, the airwaves burn, stand up, listen, it's time to learn, behind the woodshed. To hide a can of bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned, house words ignite, the airways burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. So mark the time when Sunday comes, behind the woodshed, feet
beating drums. House voice, a beacon, fierce and bold in the fight for truth. Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.